Don't worry, you'll lift off. Sometimes you just need a creative pep talk.
Hey, you're listening to Creative Pep Talk, a weekly podcast companion for your creative journey. My name is Andy J. Pizza. I'm a New York Times bestselling author and illustrator. This show is where we explore what it takes to build a thriving, well-balanced creative practice. Let's go. This episode is for you if you feel like your work lacks depth, or you're not sure what to make, or you have a lot of ideas and you don't know which to choose next. Or maybe you're stuck in the middle of a project that you just can't find the energy to finish. If you stick until the end of this episode, I'm going to give you a tool called Creative Kindling that is going to help you decide what to focus on and keep you fueled all the way to the finish line. But first, we got to talk about not what makes me angry about creativity, but what makes me creative about anger. I'll explain that in just a second. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. If you're like most creative people I know, you don't struggle with having ideas, but rather completing ideas. Maybe it's that you just don't have enough time to do all the ideas you're excited about, or you just can't choose which ideas to focus on right now. Or maybe you have picked a project that you were really excited about and you thought was the one, and you've just lost that loving feeling. Wherever you're at, you might be in a place where you don't have the fuel and certainty to do the work today. One thing that causes me to give up an idea before finishing it is this feeling that what I'm working on lacks depth. Like, it's just not meaningful enough. I don't care enough to spend this much of my life focusing on it. Now, all of these problems may be solved by choosing your projects through a specific lens that I turn to and go back to over and over in my own creative process. And it all comes from this specific driving emotion. To me, this emotion is kind of the secret fuel of creativity. What is this secret creative emotion, you might be asking? You might guess that it's excitement, or passion, or joy. Maybe you think creativity is the opposite of those things. Maybe you're the kind of creative that thinks of creativity in terms of sadness or melancholy or all the emotions associated with the tortured artist trope. But for me, if I'm struggling to choose a direction or finish a project, I try to tap into an emotion that might be surprising to you. Because for me, the secret creative emotion that has potential to guide your practice and fuel your fire is anger. Okay, stick with me. I know this sounds strange and you probably don't think of me as a particularly angry guy. And I don't think of myself as particularly angry. However, anger is a very useful creative compass. And here's why. It's often a secondary emotion. is the type of emotion that usually comes from a previous emotion that has so much intensity because it hasn't been fully expressed, it hasn't found a way to come out, and now it's like steam coming out of a teapot. The steam is the anger, and the bubbling water underneath is whatever emotion is producing it. Whatever emotion is so unexpressed and misunderstood that it is bubbling up to the surface and desperate to whistle its way out. Anger can be the result of love and compassion for something that's not being treated properly. It could be the result of a feeling like I'm not understood and I'm feeling hurt and lonely. It can be a result of loving something so much and getting so much joy from something that nobody else seems to understand. This idea that anger is sometimes the result of a very intense emotion that is essentially built up and desperate to break through and desperate to be expressed and communicated means that it's precisely the perfect fodder for your creative work, because your creative work is expression. It is the thing that is allowing you to express yourself in ways that you haven't been able to with just plain words in your everyday. Sometimes I feel like perhaps the types of creative work that I do now, the illustration and storytelling, might not necessarily be linked to what comes naturally to me, but maybe what I am frustrated with or what I'm not so good at. Like maybe I started to do illustration and storytelling partially because I didn't feel like I could communicate myself well. And I gravitated towards these things out of necessity because I felt misunderstood and I needed a tool that could help me powerfully and clearly express my perspective in a way that I finally felt seen. As someone with ADHD who is deeply prone to tangents and struggles to kind of intuitively, naturally know where a story should begin and where a story should end, it's no wonder that I've spent the past 10 years devouring books on storytelling techniques and craft because I needed help explaining who I am, where I came from, what I care about in a way that people would actually pay attention to. So it's no wonder that I have obsessed over how to symbolize and give metaphor to and analogize, if that's a word, the things that are supercharged within me that I'm having difficulty expressing in my everyday. I don't know if art and creativity is exclusively a kind of utilitarian technical tool that we've developed over time to overcome the barriers of loneliness and being individuals who are stuck in this psyche and body, but desperate to be part of something bigger than we are and desperate to connect. But I do know that adopting this perspective seems to help me when I'm having a hard time remembering why I chose to create something or why I chose to pursue a particular project or how to decide what has enough life to pour into a new thing next. Using anger as a compass for finding creative fuel is something that I've thought about for a long time, all the way back to when I was first introduced to this idea that anger is a secondary emotion when I was working at a youth shelter / juvenile detention center back in my early 20s. And then more recently, I heard one of my favorite creators, Ryan Johnson, say the same thing and said that anger is one of the only things that he can trust to start a project on that will fuel him through all the way to the finish line. And he was talking about this in his episode with one of his collaborators on a bunch of different projects, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, on his podcast, Creative Processing. Ryan Johnson is the filmmaker behind movies like Brick and Looper, both of which star Joseph Gordon-Levitt, as well as blockbusters like Knives Out and Star Wars: The Last Jedi. And he spoke about in this interview how most of his projects that gain any real traction for him are linked specifically to anger that is primarily pointed at himself and things about himself that frustrate him. And the reason why I believe that this anger can be the kind of X marks the spot for determining where to dig for your own creative gold is because anger is this desperation for expression. Therefore, anger can point the way to things that you are desperate to express most. And not only does it mean that your plain language and everyday way of expression isn't doing this thing justice, but it also means that you need to express it. You need to find an expression for it. And if it's a need, you are going to have so much more fuel than just something you want to do. And then your creative practice becomes a necessity. It becomes something that you must turn to. And that is the kind of thing that's going to push you over the finish line. For me, your creative work is this kind of powerful exoskeleton mech thing that goes on top of you as a person and these feelings that you have. And it takes things like plain language and it gives them a supercharge, a poetry that is able to grab people's attention long enough and hold them captive long enough to deliver the expression at the magnitude that you feel it. Your art then becomes this giant body on the outside of you that's powerful and attention-grabbing and meaningful and visceral on the outside that can give form to the giant body of text that's in your brain that you're desperate to communicate. It might be this idea that you have a 1,000-word essay of why you think pugs are the best dog, but nobody will pay attention, so you gotta draw pictures about it. And those pictures can express 1,000 words in a more visceral way than plain language ever could. So a few months back, I was doing a talk in Phoenix, Arizona, and I needed to record an interview that I'd accidentally booked while I was going to be out of town. And so I made a call on the internet to see if anybody had a microphone and an internet connection and a quiet space where I could complete this call while I was in Phoenix. And comic artist and graphic designer Jay Gonzo, who I wasn't familiar with at the time, came through in a pinch and really helped me sort that out. But while I was there, I also got talking to him about his creative work and this comic that he did called El Mano del Destino. And I had to scrappily kind of record our conversation with my phone so that I could just share this little excerpt because it was such an incredible example of a creator taking their frustration and using their tools, the visual art, the storytelling, the symbolism to express this as a burning passion. So excuse the audio quality. It's not terrible, I don't think. But I had to just grab my phone and start recording because it's such a good image of so many things we talk about on this show. Not just the anger thing, but also kind of listen out for him talk about how luchadors are this perfect symbol that really mirror the philosophy behind the point that he's trying to make. I'm always gathering examples of powerful uses of symbolism and story because I think it kind of trains your brain to be able to pick out the symbols that you need for your own illustration or your own storytelling or whatever. But here's a little bit of that chat that I had with Jay Gonzo. What is that book about?
It's about a once champion luchador who is betrayed by his friends and unmasked in the ring. And so as per the rules of Lucha Libre, you can never be that person again. Mm. So he makes a Faustian bargain with the mysterious promoter to get a new identity, that of La Mano del Destino. and a new power to get his revenge. But like all good comic book bargains, there are strings attached.
Yeah.
So he's trying to get out of the deal, still get his revenge, but more importantly, remain the person he knows himself to be. And it all happens in this like swanky jet age 1960s Mexico where like lucha libre is the most important thing in that world. So like if like my business wanted to take over your business, your luchador would fight my luchador and whoever won the business deal. Or even like legally wise, like if you know you were trying to pass a law that I was trying to block in Congress, like my champion would take on your champion. And
this is like a real thing?
No, it's just the way that I set the world up.
Oh, like, okay. So I was like, I wanted, this is very interesting. I like that.
I wanted to create So the creation of it, we're talking a little bit about this. I was unhappy with the way that luchadores were portrayed in American pop culture because those guys are my heroes. And then when you see it in an American movie, they're kind of a punchline or a joke.
Yeah.
And that's very upsetting to see someone that I consider like that very lauded to me be kind of, turn into a punchline. You know, yeah. it's degrading, you know. And broader than that, I was sick of seeing my culture portrayed as nothing but violence and poverty. As a Mexican, every time you see Mexico in an American movie, it is brown and sepia tone. It's like the joke of the Mexico filter.
Yeah.
And it always involves cartels and beheadings. And it's just this weird need for white America to otherize, but also feel good about it in the way that they get to have this like, you know, condescending
white savior.
Yeah, exactly. Thing, these poor brown people and the horrors they have to endure with such dignity.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my culture is so much more bright and vibrant than that, and it's so much more than that mono narrative that they're trying to create, right? And I kind of kept saying that, like, you know, someone needs to celebrate the beauty of my culture, show the bright, vibrant hues of that. Someone needs to do a story where, like, lucha libre is the most important thing, you know, like, where lucha libre is treated with respect, the luchadores are shown as heroes. And then I ultimately was like, well, I can do that.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, to me, the heyday of the luchador is like the 1960s when, like, El Santo and Mil Máscaras and Blue Demon were making movies, and they were just everywhere. And I get to draw like mid-century modern furniture Googie architecture and have this kind of swanky, everyone's in a suit, you know, like a fitted suit, and also wearing like lucha libre mask. And so I also get like the bright, vibrant pageantry of my culture, of the sport. And I also get to like tell a story about kind of the internalized respectability politics of like the Chicano diaspora. But it is also a story about dudes and mass beating on each other. Like I first and foremost, it has to be an engaging story, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to do a TED talk about those kind of like the caste system that existed before Hernan Cortez showed up and the kind of, the hierarchies that existed and the exploitations that then the Spanish has put them, you know, the fallout of colonialism, like all of that. Like I can write a dissertation on that, but no one's going to read that shit.
Right.
But what I can do is I can, you know, create these analogs in like promoters and wrestlers and champions and, you know, rudos versus technicos and like those kind of draw those kind of parallels and also just tell a fun, dumb story. So, that's why it's set in the 60s. But I also, so to answer your question, I wanted a world in which lucha libre was the most important thing in that world.
Yeah.
Much like in my head, it is lucha libre in Lamano's world is what auto racing is in Speed Racer's world. It's like the only thing that happens in that world, right? Yeah. So
I love that.
I wanted a society built around luchadores, and it allowed me to kind of like reach back to like, you know, Mesoamerica is a land of masked warriors. You know, that go back to the Olmec and the Toltec and all these guys before, you know, Cortez even shows up. And it is also we have lauded our masked lawyers for, you know, masked warriors for centuries, you know, and I think that that's part of why the success of the luchador happened in Mexico. The masked wrestler made sense. There's also a bit of like, I've said this a few times, but we'll tell your audience. So,
what is it?
Chicanos, Mexican American, you know, Mexicans. Yeah. I'll say Mexicans because I am Mexican or Chicano. Right. We have a tenuous relationship with identity as an inherent identity because we all have, you know, 80% of Mexico or 85%, depending on what you want to look at, is mestizo or mixed, right? So I have the skin color of the conquered, but the last name of the conquerors.
Mm.
So it's hard for me to live on one side of a victimizer. Right. You know, I'm as much conquistador as I am conquered. And so we tend to put value in our heroes that do the right thing and that aren't like Harry Potter gets to go to Hogwarts because of who he is.
Yeah.
Arthur gets to pull the sword out because of who he is. Right.
Yeah.
our heroes tend to be not about who they are, but what they do.
I love it.
And that's the luchador exemplifies that because he obscures his identity to be an idea and solely defined by not his inherent identity, by his action and his effect in the ring.
Yeah.
And so, and he's also risking it every night. Like, yeah, you know, you lose that mask, you lose everything. You don't get to be that guy again. So every fan, every victory, every win, every loss, every belt, every championship, every title, you're wearing it on your face, and it can be stripped from you at the drop of a hat. And so
that's amazing.
Thanks. So that's what I love about Lucha Libre. And so, but it is also, you know, we like, you know, like Zorro is a hero because, you know, he's a guy who was born in nobility, but masks all of that to do the right thing. You know, so we have a tradition of heroics that are about, you know, we have such a long history from, you know, from, what is his name? Not Pancho Villa, the other one, the, Porfirio, it's better to die on your feet than to live on your knees. I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, he was kind of an upper class guy who did the right thing. Yeah. Man, I can't. Zapata, Emiliano Zapata. You know, we have a long love affair with people who are who don't rest on what they are and just do the right thing. And so that is one of the things I wanted to exemplify in the kind, you know, or heighten in this kind of like Lucha Libre world. So that's the story, you know. And then it also, you know, again, it's dumb fun, you know, dudes in masks beating on each other. Nothing better than a dude in a suit with a Lucha Libre mask on, you know, driving a Lincoln Continental around, you know, like those. It just looks cool, man. Yeah, like, so that's that. And I do everything on that. So I wrote, drew it, put it all together, you know, passion project of mine. But, you know, it's afforded me some fun opportunities.
This might sound great, hopefully, but how do you actually do it? Let's talk through some examples and use them as prompts to find where your own emotions are bubbling up to the surface, and you can find those frustrated plumes of creative steam to start fueling your engine. So the most obvious one that probably comes to mind, I think, is worth talking about a little bit, but I don't want to stop here because, like I said, it's obvious. So the first one is things like social justice related angers. And I think that creative work is an extremely potent tool for talking about and spreading information about the causes that mean a ton to you. And I just watched the Oscars last night, and I was really moved and struck by how both filmmakers working in fiction and documentary were able to channel their frustrations into their creative work. And I think one example that I haven't watched yet, but I think just from what I gathered seems like such a clear example of this, is the movie Zone of Interest, which uses this story from World War II of a family that is carrying on in their everyday, like everything's normal, while just on the other side of their fence is a concentration camp. And this symbol of just on the other side of the fence may not be literal for you and me, but it is a super powerful metaphor for what's happening all the time in our everyday, in our modern life, where we're just going about our day, watching TikToks, you know, drawing pictures, eating dinner, going out, whatever. And just on the other side of the fence, there is tremendous human suffering that we are turning a blind eye to. And this kind of story is such a perfect example of how to translate your anger and frustration through your creative medium to talk about social issues. And so that might be the most obvious way to allow anger to point you to those deeper passions and emotions that are feeling frustrated and not well expressed. However, not all artists are activists. And I'm a big believer that we need all types of art, and we need them in different moments in history and different moments in our everyday life. And so I don't think that every person's art must be overly political in a literal surface level way. So for me, one way that anger shows up and bubbles up and turns into my work is the stuff that I make in picture books. And this probably isn't super obvious, so I think it's kind of a good example. My work that I do for picture books is often related to the anger that I have around all the annoying things that kids do that piss me off, and I just gotta get it out there. Not really. I'm just kidding. No, it's not about the things that make me angry about kids. It's about stuff that I'm angry about from my own experience of being a kid. And so when I look back on what makes me angry about the way that I was raised in the society that I was a part of, I can peel back that anger and see empathy. And that empathy drives a lot of the work that I do in picture books. So for example, my most recent picture books, Invisible Things, and my new picture book, A Sunday with Everything on It, that comes out April 2024, the anger underneath these two books is kind of the same frustration. And the frustration is the fact that I spent 17 years on this planet without anybody in my life introducing me to how deeply mysterious this universe we live in really is, even to our smartest scientists and smartest scholars. We still have these huge, mind-boggling questions and discoveries that we can't understand. And it wasn't until I was in my late teens that I first started to read things like popular science and things around quantum physics and black holes and string theory. And I realized, like, whoa, we have so much work to do. We have so many weird, bizarre ways that the universe works that I had no idea existed. And it kind of gets at another piece of creative work that I think hints at this idea is the movie Truman Show. So if you haven't seen it, The Truman Show is just, it's a character named Truman played by Jim Carrey, and he's in a reality TV show and doesn't know it. He actually lives on a set that's isolated from the rest of the world, but he doesn't realize. And one of the ways that they keep him from realizing is they really discourage him from ever leaving or exploring too far from his hometown. And so this starts all the way back to when he's in school and he expresses wanting to be an explorer, and the teacher actually tells him, sorry, we've already explored everything. We don't need any more explorers. Like, go do something else. And I kind of felt like that growing up. I kind of felt like when people and teachers and grownups were giving me these books and these answers, that they were kind of telling me, yeah, we've already figured it all out. We don't really need thinking. We don't really need anybody that's curious anymore. And it made me kind of just become a kid who was a real escapist, who just was constantly living in his own universe and in imagination. And of course, I'm a big fan of imagination, but I'm an even bigger fan of people that are switched on and tuned in and digging into reality in the present moment. And so for me, these two books that I did, Invisible Things and A Sunday with Everything on It, both of these books are not going to come across angry whatsoever. And so they're a good example of how this prompt manifests in an unexpected way and why you might not see your own anger as a tool for creative work, because the stuff that you consume that you like may not seem to have come from a frustrated place. But for me, both of these books were me trying to create an invitation to kids into the mysteries of the universe and how incredible and fascinating this place that we live truly is. The new book, A Sunday with Everything on It, is really kind of, even though it starts like a typical multiverse story, which I don't know if there are any picture books that have tried to do multiversal stories. It's kind of a crazy thing to shoehorn into a picture book, but it starts kind of like a multiverse book. But by the end, the point of it is really an anti-multiverse moral that says, yeah, you know, multiverses are cool, but those imaginary things you're cooking up in your mind don't even come close to how incredible the universe is just right under your nose. Now, it does so hopefully more poetically than I can explain in this little bit on a podcast without pictures and without story. But that's the heart of it. And that's an example of how a frustration can transform into something that's really whimsical and fun. So it might be anger that points to your empathy. A past guest of the show and a friend of mine, poet Morgan Harper Nichols, expressed a similar thing when she was on this show. And she would talk about how sometimes when she is going to make art, she'll close her eyes and envision being in her past college dorm room and staring at these blank walls because she didn't have any art or posters that she really felt like hanging up. And she uses that picture as a way to tap into the empathy of her past self. And she makes posters for that version of herself that version of herself needed. And it gets at this quote that's one of my all-time favorite quotes that I've talked about a couple times in the show by Gary Shandling. And he's famous for telling other comedians to give what you didn't get, which essentially is saying, what is the art that you wish existed? I think in a way, every art piece that gets made is a type of critique on what hasn't been made. For me personally, this kind of looks like when I was a kid, I remember watching Kermit the Frog and Gobo the Fraggle and these very normal kind of buttoned up characters as the heroes and being frustrated that the weirdos like Gonzo, no relationship to Jay Gonzo that I know of, but Gonzo didn't get to be the main character. Or Wimbley, the goofy Fraggle, didn't get to be the main character because those were the ones that I related to. And I kind of look back and I get mad because I think it made me feel like I couldn't be the main character in my own story and in my own life. And luckily, as I got older, things like SpongeBob came along and Gonzo did get his own movie, although Muppets in Space, I think personally, is not my favorite Muppet movie. And I think they should give it another shot if you're listening. Lisa and Brian Henson. But it's a example of where I get some of my creative fire. Another way this empathy pulses through my work is how me and my wife, Sophie, are desperate to create stories that are extremely fun and not just educational for kids. And I could go on and on about this, but I think it's said much better by a group of picture book author and illustrators like John Clausen, Mac Barnett, and Carson Ellis. They did this picture book proclamation at thepicturebook.co, which is this simple graphic with a list of kind of core values and statements about what they believe picture books should be. And a big part of it is just bringing the fun back to picture books. I think that that is so essential. Kids deserve for their media to be as entertaining and as relieving and viscerally enjoyable as the stuff that we consume every day. And so for me, ideally, picture books would be like three parts fun, one part medicine. You know what I mean? And of course, every single episode of this podcast is an expression of anger. Like what would a pep talk be without a little fury? But seriously, almost every single episode of this podcast is something that I am fired up about, something that I'm mad about or wish that someone would have taught me or something I see other creators struggling with. And it really grinds my gears that we live in a society that doesn't value and educate and cultivate these creative people the way that they deserve to be treated. And so that fire has fueled me for 10 years of making this show, and I don't feel any less angry. So I'm going to keep making it. But it can also be as simple as just a hyper-focused passion that you just can't find anybody that will listen to you to the degree in which you feel excited about it. No one will mirror the level of excitement and interest in this thing that you feel. And so for me, one of the most powerful things that you can do with your skill or talent is to invest that time into those things that you believe deserve more attention, and you give them all the energy and attention and learning and creativity and craft that you know that they deserve so that you can make something super potent that grabs people's attention and kind of instantaneously, viscerally communicates the magnitude of this importance to an audience to the degree that you feel it. And it might look like spending years on a movie about an idea that you know needs more attention, and you know that maybe no one else cares enough or sees what you see enough to give this thing years of their time. But if you use your creativity, you can get their attention long enough to give it a couple hours of their time and change the way they feel about this and change the way they think about our world through the creative stuff that you're doing. And this has been very true in my own creative practice, and it's also been something true just in my everyday life. When I get really frustrated in a relationship, I've learned to turn to my creative tools of storytelling that I use in picture books and on stage and talks and stuff like that. And I turn to find symbols and metaphors and analogies that help me express my point and my feelings. And I've used story structure to help communicate the hurts that I've had and the passions and the experiences that I have that parents or friends don't understand. And I've been truly grateful, not just for the ways that the teacher of anger has improved my creative work, but also all the ways that my creativity has improved my ability to relate to people and my overall sense of who I am in my real life. Your CTA, it is creative kindling. So every single episode of this show, we try to leave you with a creative call to adventure, aka your CTA, your call to action, to put these ideas into your practice instantly so they don't just feel good and then not really make any difference. So here it is. This is your creative kindling, how to put this idea to practice. Okay, so maybe you're at this point where you're on board for allowing anger to have the space in your life to point you to the fire that can fuel your creative practice, but you're probably not in this moment feeling super angry, hopefully. I mean, I don't make this podcast to piss people off, so I'm hoping that it doesn't make you angry. I hope you're feeling great and pepped and refreshed, but if anger really is a secret weapon for your creative practice, how are you able to tap into it on command when you need to make something? Well, it's kind of like the Incredible Hulk. In the early stages of his journey, he doesn't have a conscious relationship with that big green part, that big angry part of who he is. And so he's not always able to transform into the Hulk on command. So at the end of hearing this episode, you might be like an early Bruce Banner who's in a pinch, really needs that superpower to come out, but you're stuck like, oh man, I'm trying to get angry, but nothing's happening, Andy. What do I do? Well, I think you do the same thing that Bruce Banner learns to do, and how he learns to have access to this secret fuel at all times. His secret is, of course,
I'm always angry.
He never loses contact with his angry side. Now, I'm not suggesting that you stay angry all the time, but I am suggesting that you take a lesson from the Incredible Hulk and you put your anger in a place where you can access it whenever you need it. So as you move through your day and through your week and through your month, make a note on your phone or in your sketchbook where you can take notice of every time you feel anger and create a bullet point for every one of those things and keep track of it like you're gathering kindling for your creative fire. That way you can go back to it when you're like, I don't know what to make. I got a couple hours on a Sunday and I need to create it. I need to make use of this. And you can go back to this and you can see, these are the things that are bubbling up within me. These are the things that I'm having a difficult time expressing with normal words in my everyday, and figure out ways of transmuting those things into your creative practice. And it's also good for when you do go start a creative project, especially those more long-term things, that you can go back to that creative kindling when you're in the middle of the marathon and allow it to be that juicy energy goo pack that you take out of your camelback and fuel the rest of your fire. Because sometimes when I'm in the middle of something, I have to go back to like, why am I frustrated about this? Why is this something that needs to be made, that needs to be said, that needs art to give full expression to? And tapping back into that anger can help get me juiced to keep going. And by the way, speaking of things that make me angry, like I said, I just watched the Oscars and I was very annoyed that one of my all-time favorite actors, Mark Ruffalo, who I think is the best Hulk of all time, had his Oscar stolen from him by none other than his co-star, Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. Very annoyed by that. I was really hoping that Mark Ruffalo would get the celebration that I've always felt like he deserved. And at least it went to another Avenger. You'll get him next time, Mark, but at least it's just more creative kindling for your fire if you're listening to this. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody, and do whatever you gotta do to stay angry. Creative Pep Talk is your weekly podcast companion for your creative journey. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. I'm a New York Times bestselling picture bookmaker and illustrator for clients like Xbox and Apple. I pep talk teams at creative hubs like Warby Parker and Sesame Street, and I make this podcast because for me, it takes a whole lot of creativity just to get out of bed in the morning sometimes, let alone attempt to create a thriving creative practice. This show is just me sharing the things that seem to be helping in case they help anybody else. Shout out to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music and soundtrack. Huge thanks to Connor Jones of Pinning Beautiful for the sound design and editing the show. Massive thanks to Katie Chandler and Sophie Miller for podcast assistance of all kinds. And thanks to you for listening. And until we speak again, stay pepped up.